Right, this is going to be another episode of Snake and Banter with me and Maui. And our guest for this one is going to be Nort, who is a senior editor at HLTV.org. You may have seen in the past, he appeared on one of my Big Brain shows. So obviously, Nort, as always, we start with the guest. And the joke is, the reason why I actually just start good because the title did go the good, the bad and the ugly. But I realized it also works because you get to be positive at the beginning. Obviously, some of us in this call maybe have a predilection to negativity, who knows, or criticism. And then in the middle, you get all that out of your system. And at the end, ugly's sort of like, it's like in life, you learn to love ugly things, like CS and the CS community.
Not gonna lie, I wrote my bad and ugly point first too.
Oh, there we go. Okay. So what is your good point then? What are you going with the good one in? It sounds like it was the hardest one.
Yeah, so my good point ended up being that I actually like that FaZe has been forced into a change, considering the twist is departing. They're rumored to be adding Frozen. I'm gonna talk about this as if they are adding Frozen well, but in general, I feel like the fact that they're forced into a move means that they're getting a little ahead of the curve, because the way that they're winning these events and matches isn't going to be consistent once all of these other rosters that have made changes or are playing in these events are going to stabilize. You're seeing that they're coming back from like massive deficits, or they're winning these rounds that they're scraping by because they have this tenured roster with experience, but it's not something that's going to be consistent once all of these teams stabilize. So you have Ents making, who've made changes, you have Vitality, you have Malus who are coming up. The other thing is that if they do end up getting Frozen out of this, they're also basically reducing the power of one of their biggest competitors right now in the form of Malus. So that kind of combines in my head as to FaZe being able to start climbing past what their current result pool is and consistently managing to get these results, because if you go forward in a little bit of time, they're not going to keep winning these tight games every single time. And they haven't had this like dominant era in the sense of like, they're not winning these games by a landslide. They're sneaking through half these wins. You have Complexity crumbling a couple of times against them. So as we go further into CS2 and as you get into the major, being able to make this change now actually sets them up for way better success in the future. And it reunites Rops, Kerrigan, Frozen. So a lot of storylines also that come together and make this a very exciting prospect as well.
I've wanted the Frozen move for such a long time that
Yours is usually that for Rain, though, right?
It's usually it was for Rain. That's what I initially wanted. So the one for one in terms of roles isn't quite as smooth of a transition when it is Frozen for Twist. However, the fact that you bring up you're poaching a player from the team that's one of your biggest competitors in Mouse is also a really fun fact. So that's something that's going to work to their benefit. I do think that Frozen is capable. I've actually before mentioned that I really think that Frozen is one of the most versatile riflers in the game. And I know that people point to his opening kill stats acting like he can't be aggressive, but if you really watch the games with Mouse, you'll see that the reason that he has such low opening kill stats is always because Exertion is just taking 30%+ of the duels to start things off, and it's sometimes in the second person to run in is Frozen. And so I always thought that he was incredibly capable of running in first, like he used to do, by the way, with the old 2019 roster on Mouse Sports when he played with Kerrigan and when he played with Rops for that matter. And so if he is slotting into Twist roles, I have no doubt that he will be able to slot into those roles just fine. I am not worried about any roles that Frozen ever has to fill. I think he is completely fine at handling all of those, just like Nico would be, practically speaking. You wouldn't necessarily want him to be an anchor like these kind of star riflers, but they could definitely handle it. And the thing is that, well, Frozen does anchor on a couple maps. So, yeah, if that is the case, then that'll be cool. And to kind of get back to your initial point that FaZe are kind of being forced to make a change here, I don't know if I necessarily love that, just because I did think, okay, for some reason this team got a new lease on life when they were playing CS2, and it looked good on them. It was like they started just finding that motivation once again. And also, I think that Neo has been such a massive contributor to making sure that this team also has a renewed sense, because I've been able to talk to him one-on-one too when I was at Blast, and I was like, Are you bringing new plays to the table? Because they're running a lot of different strategies. And he's like, yep, I'm coming up with stuff as well. And they're using that. And I think that is everybody's just feeding off each other cyclically in a very positive manner.
Yeah, I think this is a tough one because on the one hand, like, I see what Nort means. Like, I sort of do agree. To me, even from the I Am Sydney, it just looked too good to be true. Like you say, it's not like they just... Here's the thing, Nort. If they just 2-0'd everyone and they were winning in dominant fashion, you'd go, right, cool, keep this lineup. This is easily the best. But even that one, like, I agree. Put it this way, Col almost took that final. And then I always point this out. Dude, the one after that, the CAC... Like, FaZe themselves barely won that one. They were, like, limping through the matches. If you ever go and look, that was, like, one of the easiest MVPs of all time for their team. There was, what, three of them were, like, 0.9 rated. That's ridiculous. Like, 1.9. Like, it wasn't an event like the old ones people remember from CSGO where they used to have, like, three players, you know, like, battle each other for the MVP. That one they barely won. Obviously, forget the online one. I don't even care about that one. And then this one, true, they could have won this land. Certainly, they could have won a third one. If anything, though, I actually think it's good that if Twists has now left, that they didn't win the last LAN, because that would be the nightmare. Yeah. If you're someone who likes history like me, it's like you don't even ever get to see them actually be beaten. They just break themselves up. Like, at least this way they did lose the final. They even lost the last map. Like, I mean, the final in general was somewhat convincing. Obviously they had a good T side, that was about it though. So I actually think it's totally fair that they break up. I also do sort of agree, if you look at, like, they were sort of winning by virtue of, like, well, they kept the same roster, so you saw they just had like the it factor in the clutch rounds that we're talking about. I agree that you can't win on that long term though. Like, you have to have other things in the game that make you the best. And also, if you look, like, Vitality looks super, like you say, you just go down the list of rosters, most of the rosters haven't even properly activated, or some of them haven't even gone to the events yet. Like, I agree, by the time next year begins, this FaZe roster, they could be in the mix, but they wouldn't be your number one candidate. Like, and I don't think even they think that. So it's why also, in a bizarre way, I do get this weird vibe that they are on that sort of, like, dead team anyway, lol, so who really cares? Like, doesn't really, if anything, it has lifted the pressure from them. But I've found in history, when teams do that, you can't really then go, like, wow, we've mind-fucked ourselves in a play well, now let's just not break up. It's like, it only lasts for, it's like the honeymoon period, it can't last forever, guys. You can't just do that for 2 years and, like, manipulate reality. So I think already they've got quite a few trophies out there. They've done a good job. And then also, on the whole topic of the Mouse angle, that's actually low-key a straight fire angle that plebs haven't thought of. In theory, you do know, if you are... back in the day phase and G2 and Vitality and teams that the perception that Falcons have money, you actually, in theory, should prioritize recruiting from Mouse and Ents, because you can actually just destroy their teams with money. You don't actually even need that to be the best pickup for you. If you're choosing between, like, should I take Sun Pius or should I take Sun Pius, you idiot? Simple's going to be mega wherever he goes. You take Sun Pius off Ents, they're about half as good. Like, it's game over for them. So low key, that's actually straight fire Game of Thrones as well. Just destroy them at the same time as upgrading. And then also, I actually think a mega underrated angle is that one that Frozen previously played with both Robs and Carrigan. Because if you think, when he played with Carrigan, a lot of people forget this, dude, he was like 16 years old in his first tier one team, speaking second language English. Like, that was a scoffed Frozen. If you look at what Carrigan did with people like Robs over their career, dude, this could be what takes Frozen to the next level. This could be what actually puts him up there. And the key thing here is this. If people remember last year on this show and Hot Take Point Made, Maui, I always did point out that of the three of the star trio, Twists usually had the lower numbers. Dude, if Frozen can actually kick in a gear and they really do have, like, three players compete with each other for the MVP, that's where you get, like, a dominant teammate. Like, and as we're saying here, like, in this scenario, what's ridiculous is because everyone just before was doing the, like, what if we take Rain out? Dude, Rain can stay. If we have three bangers who are, like, compete for MVP, Rain can just stay, mate. He's doing his job. Don't worry about that. Like, that aspect can just run. So, yeah, I actually think it's a rare instance of, normally I'm a bit skeptical of roster moves because it's like, you never sure how it'll work out. This feels like a slam dunk. It feels like he just walks in, sits down, and they start winning the game. In fact, they might, for real, even be better at the first tournament. I could believe it.
I also think on 2 points is that Frozen's also younger than Twist. He's only 21. So you also have, like, a longevity aspect coming into a phase that has two older players as well. On top of that, they've also talked a lot about their communication issues, especially during their down period. They were saying that they had a hard time getting their communication back up to how it used to be, and they struggled to kind of adapt. And usually when you bring in a new player, a lot of teams actually have better communication right away, just because you're calming more. You have to communicate a lot more of the small things that you stopped communicating when you stabilized on a roster. And especially considering that there's already history between Rops and Kerrigan and Frozen, I think that will actually make it mesh a lot better at the start. And instead of having that period where the communication is really good and then it kind of tapers off and you have to bring it back, I actually think that won't necessarily happen with this particular roster. So I think those combined into all of that help a lot in the longevity aspect for this change as well.
Yes. Also, spoiler, Frozen's going to have to get more aggressive. He's playing on a team with fucking Rops, who lurks more than the fucking Grim Reaper. This guy's ridiculous. So, like, he's going to have to be part of the pack anyway, isn't he? Like, that's just gone without saying. Right, Maui, what is your good point, mate?
My good point is the fact that I would say that I've been already a proponent of this guy at being a good in-game leader, but once again, he proves it to me, is that, frankly and simply put, Apex is just a good in-game leader. Like, he's a very good in-game leader, as a matter of fact. At the Blast Fall Finals, they had the best T-side round win percentage, and they had the best 5v4 conversion percentage as well. It does help, obviously, when you have a couple people on your team like Sphinx and Zywie that are able to find so many early round entries. But I would say that it was incredibly convincing in the semifinal, in the playoffs especially, where the mid-rounding was just so strong from Apex, where he was so frequently going to whatever bomb site that had less players on it for the opposing team, sometimes making kind of mid-rounds that seemingly felt a little bit like guesswork, and then it would just be the correct one. Like, so what I also mean by that is just that it's kind of just like the greater narrative that has always kind of persisted, which is that Apex, is he a great in-game leader, or does he just have good players? I think now he certifiably has one of the worst rosters that he's had for some time, and yet he is still putting forward a championship winning effort with a very strong T side. And so this is with a newly integrated Mezzi, a Flames that is still kind of figuring out what it's like to be a tier one consistent pro. And then obviously you do have Zywie, who is incredibly strong, but a Sphinx that is putting up some great numbers, but also like was finding his way for such a long time on this map. This is no longer just a veteran team where he was able to rely on people like Majisk and Dupree to be other voices on the team to try to help him out. And I have no doubt that people like Mezzi can contribute, or like even Zywie at this point is lightly contributing, but it does seem that at this point Apex has to probably shoulder more of the burden than he has for a very long time, probably since he's had to call with Kyojin Masuda, and yet he's still putting forward incredibly cohesive T sides that I at this point just simply respect.
I mean, also one thing that you didn't count there was the fact that he's lost Sonic and still able to do it, because that was a question that a lot of people had when Sonic left, was whether he contributed so much to Apex's calling, and whether Apex could actually continue that without having any of the influence of Zonic's pauses and the information that he would give. Like, Exiles was also doing a pretty good job in the pauses, at least from what it looked like on the broadcast, but the fact that Apex continues to maintain this level does actually, I agree, like, it shows that he is able to do it consistently and do it with multiple iterations of this roster. Even, like, you have the Sydney tournament, but I feel like the angle on the broadcast of, like, Zywie having, like, bad form was a little bit overplayed, because, yes, obviously, it was four maps, though. Yes, he had a bad tournament in Sydney, but it was four maps, and Vitality obviously knew the changes were coming. They went to the event, and they didn't have a lot of their support staff that they usually do, which Apex actually, I think, tweeted out and said that made quite a difference.
All right.
So he said that even in at the Paris Major, they had, like, 9 or 10 or 11 people as staff members after every game when they would go outside surrounding them, and they didn't have that in Sydney. So when you have that kind of a difference in support staff for this kind of team also, you're going to see that change in Sydney, and over here it seems like they've actually been able to overcome that and adapt. I do have the question of how long that will last, because from what it seems like and from the way the players have talked about it, that specific the structure and the extra people that they had around them actually gave them a lot of benefit in the long run for being able to mentally stabilize between matches, in matches, in series. So they're going to have to reinforce that support staff, I think, and they're going to have to do it pretty quickly. But I think, to your point, Apex has been able to show that he can do it himself in terms of being able to keep himself in the game. And I think Exiles is actually providing a pretty big benefit individually to Apex in that sense as well.
I think one thing that's quite fair is that you both did actually outline that it's not just like in-game leader only. It's like coach plus the rest of the staff. Because if people didn't know, Vitality have a way bigger staff. Like, remember when they won the major, they went out of their way to basically say like Extaz was there the whole time in the background, sort of like helping him out. Obviously, the Lars Robel guy was the old smart psychologist guy of Astralis. And he had fucking Zonic. So, and the Matt guy who was there now was there before. He also was just more of a background figure unless you're in the French scene, basically. So they actually have a pretty big staff of people. So I agree. If you change enough pieces in and out, if the team, I mean, they're sort of good in a different way, but if they're really good again, it sort of does imply whatever remained must be having some of the impact. So if you think about before, it's actually fair that people were very skeptical of Apex before, because one, his old style of play as an entry, it's just obviously not a very cerebral style of play. And I actually say, by the way, this is the one area I have a knock on him, why I don't think he'll ever be the best IGL. I don't think he's a super smart guy. What I actually think is cool about Apex, and he was like this as a player, I can tell you, is he puts in the hours. Like, he really will put in loads of hours trying. And so he'll try and find the answers. He'll try and probably go to the demos or work what the coach says. So I do think he's very open-minded in that sense. So I do think, though, when he was with the old lineup that won the major, there were some people who thought he was like French Huxley, basically. It's like, bro, you have the best player in Zwu. You have the greatest coach of all time. You have Magus, who's probably like the most OP third man slash secondary caller in the game. Like, and then what, Dupreez, you're like, give me a break. And then Spinks, by the way, was already straight fire rifle and end. So it's actually quite easy if you want to be like a bit reductive and be like, what is he even doing? Are you just not dying? Or in his case, dying, but then getting to win the tournament. Shout out Apex. But our problem with that one is, like, you look now, it's almost a totally different team from the one that won the major. Like, you've lost both Danish players, and the players you've played them with, they're not even vaguely a one-for-one swap. Like, this is a and you've lost a coach, you've gone back to your old coach. Even though, as you say, he has history with him, yeah, it's working with a new lineup player. I mean, the joke now is they're working all in English. That's the guy, you'll know this, he barely fucking will do an English interview, and he's now working fully in English. So I already wondered, like, that myself, like, will that even work? So, fair play that they come right out the gate and win. I also think, quite frankly, if you watch the way they won this tournament, dude, I could see a world where CS2 might actually really suit Apex's style. He's basically said that the problem with when they had Zonic was they were initially trying to bring as much Astralis into Vitality as they could, but then they basically, before they started winning, they flipped the switch and just went like up tempo phase style. I'll tell you what, mate, that's also one of the reasons I think phase has also been winning in CS2. Dude, if you play up tempo fast and you're willing to like run through the smokes and stuff, those are the teams that are having success right now. This isn't like old CS where you just wait around a corner. In fact, everyone knows the peak is advantage isn't there. It's not old CS. So I could even see his style of calling being even better now. Like, and let's be real, he's not with one of the old teams way back where it's like Zwu has to mega carry. Zwu doesn't even have to mega carry now. Look at the bit. They could have like three people could be top frag in the game. And by the way, on the Zwu one, I know what you mean. Look, the idea Zwu was never going to be good was obviously ridiculous. But I also think, as usual, probably because they've just read too many bad comments, I do also think Vitality themselves overstressed this narrative. Like, hey, see, he just silenced all his critics. It's like,
oh yeah, totally.
His critics were right. He actually was fucking bad at the first event. Like, when are people going to learn that this isn't how life works? Like, if you slip over in a pile of dog shit today and I go, wow, you look dirty, you can't then come the next day to talk. It's like, what are you talking about, dickhead? I've silenced all my critics, haven't I? It's like, no, you were dirty that day. Now you're clean and dressed up. They're like, what are we even doing here? You know what I mean? What game is this we're playing, boys?
That's literally the whole thing with what I said on the desk and like how much flame it got for it. I said on the desk that, you know, from the six, like not even just the first four maps that he played, but the first six, including the first series he played at the Fall Finals, he wasn't a top 10 player at that moment. He could obviously change. But people are like, for some reason, Zwu fans are the most insecure people ever. Like, they have to always try to like show, like anytime he proves like the doubters wrong, where he just has a good map, it has to be thrown into the face of any detractor, even if the slight is so menial. It doesn't matter how small it is. It's always just like look at it. He played good again. It's like how much is going wrong in your life that you have to hold on to this guy's successes this fucking deeply.
And also, let's be real. Anyone who's ever like experienced online fans knows that to a Zwu fan, if I say in English the sentence, Zwu's really good, but for me, he's the second best. To them, that's like, he's subhuman trash who can't do anything. And then the joke is, like you're saying, Maui, then he'll just play like a group stage game, not even versus like Simpler, whoever in the back I'm saying was the best. He'll just play a group stage game against anyone, drop 30, and they'll be like, how about now then? It's like, what does that have to do with anything? Like, I agree. They not only try to take every W, they try to take W's out of their mates. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
I mean, I don't know if you saw the interview quote he gave after he won the MVP, but he said something like, oh, like I got a bit of an ego. So you know what, you Alex, go. This narrative that you've created or helped on the broadcast, you've had massive cultural impact.
Oh, that's the other thing.
An ego, finally.
Dude, that's the other thing that kills me inside is when people simultaneously say, ha, I proved all the trash talkers wrong. And then they take a breath. That's why no one should ever trash talk. You've just explained that was the process that made you level up. What? You do realize by what you've just said that you should want people to trash talk him when he's bad by that logic. Like, if it actually spurs him on to sort of prove people wrong, the joke is you should be hitting me up like, hey, go harder. He's only got 6 kills. Go harder. Like, if anything, you should want us to rag on this guy. It worked.
Also, the level and the way that my take has been attempted to be refuted okay. is just by positing stats, and it's like the way I was able to create that is purely with stats. Like, so many of my takes are generally like eye test things, like the style of calling or like cultural impact or something like that. And finally, I'm just like, okay, here are the stats of 6 maps. These are irrefutably not top 10 player stats. And then suddenly it's like, let's ignore those six maps and look at what he's got now. Look at, he's the best again. And it's like, these are just stats driven narratives. And it's like, you couldn't even look at those first 6 maps of Zywoo and say to me with a straight face that you're watching the same player that we watched in the first 7 months of the year.
By the way, that is also low-key, like, one of my, like, sort of... It used to be a pet peeve. Now I sort of, like, it's almost like my kink now, is I also do love what you're talking about, which is the best tweet you can do, note to really annoy a fan, like a Zywoo stan, is one that doesn't actually... I've told Maui this before. He knows it. He's tried it. Is the one that doesn't even contain an opinion. You don't even put, like, Zywoo's playing bad. You just do, like, a screenshot of, like, some bad stats. And, dude, you don't even have to say anything. Their brain makes up all the insults. Like, they'll just go wild as all... Oh, so you're saying he can't even fucking play the game, and what, and he wasn't good in that one, and did you even see what happened on round 2? You're like, bro, all I literally did is just put, I may as well just posted the weather, and you've just made all sorts of assumptions about what I think about life, the world. Like, it's actually fucking amazing. Looks like I say, once you recognize it, it stops being annoying, it becomes funny. Like, you know, you just know, like, I did it loads of times with, like, the MVP ones. All I have to do is post, like, you know, like 30% of Zywoo's MVPs are online, and they're like, oh, so you said he's online, so you didn't even see him in the major, so now he can't win on LAN count. It's like, you just, it's like a fucking, I've just wound you up, like, go on, like the little monkey when they do the key on the back, like, go ahead, do the little, that's all the stands up there. That's all.
Taking it back to the Apex point quickly, though, Thorin, you mentioned that he does put in the time. That is actually one thing that really stood out to me. I remember at EPL, I think, season 16 or whichever one they won in Malta, it was like 2 a.m. or something when they, or like, it was really, it was like 11 a.m., 11 p.m., something like that, when they beat the team in the semifinals or quarterfinals or something. And Apex was like, I interviewed him, and then he was like, no, I was like, are you going to go to bed now? Or are you going to watch like a demo or two and then go to bed? He's like, no, I think I'm going to be up for like 3 hours because I can't stop thinking about CS. I'm going to keep watching these games. I'm going to wake up, I'm going to sleep like 5 hours, wake up tomorrow, keep watching demos. I'm like, respect, okay. There's that. And also one thing specifically for this tournament is that Mezzi didn't even have a good tournament. So we're not even seeing necessarily like the full powered Vitality. Obviously we had Flames have like a life map, but and Sphinx continued to perform. But like, if Mezzi then steps up alongside all of these players who are consistently having really good performances, Sphinx keeps this level up, this Vitality could be like honestly super, super fucking good.
By the way, remember, guys, Flames is obviously himself a very young guy, inexperienced, and he is speaking second language English. Because I will just say, when he read that interview with him on HLTV, right, even though he's trying to, like, desperately find any positives to talk, it does make it sound like Messi's just a shitter, but as long as they win and he has an English accent, they're like, yeah, it's good. He's contributing. It's like, that was what was so weird about that. He didn't mention anything about him in the game, because he hasn't popped off yet, you know, like, but whatever, it's all good. By the way, the irony was, we haven't even sort of gone too far on point two, because believe it or not, my actual good point was that Zywoo was carrying. Like, he actually does look fucking sick. Not least because, I'll throw this in as well, people have overblown this fucking... It's all because of Simple. It's all Simple's fault as usual. The AWP can be bought and fired at people and kill people in Counter-Strike. Can we stop pretending like the AWP doesn't exist and every AWPer now is allowed to have like no stats on... It's just bollocks, mate. Like, one, Modesty looked awesome the first time he came with it. And then secondly, people like Jame are just fine, mate. Like, they look like nothing. They haven't barely even dropped off. Like, I'm sure it will have some impact, but people have overblown that. So I did expect eventually Zywoo would come around and be really good. It's just obviously, it's too much fun to fucking prod his fans, isn't it? And then make up, oh, will he though? Ooh. But, and obviously you do that thing of like, that's where, by the way, though, Maui, this is where you get evil. Because if he had have choked this LAN, then what you do is you just do this, like, ah, CSGO, that's in the past. You guys want to live in the present. Look, CS2, he's shit CS2, isn't he? Like, and also, the stats page for CS2, they barely played any LANs. Remember, aside from people like FaZe and Call, most people have played 1 or 2 LANs still. We still haven't got that much under our belt. So people are, as usual, people are overreacting to some of the results. But in general, though, what do you guys think of Zywoo? I mean, he looks like he could be the best player again.
Yeah, I mean, Easily. The other thing is that he can easily hybrid. He's a player that can rifle just as well as he can op. So even the fact that people are overblowing the whole op thing, no matter what, Ziwu can continue to perform regardless of whether he has an op, whether he has a rifle, he can play with pistols. It's not like just because the op was theoretically like nerfed that this player will suddenly disappear. And
it's also, by the way, low-key based now that he spent that last year or so just rifling half the time for no reason, even though in CSGO that was actually worse. Like, it's almost like some Skynet shit. Like, someone just told him, yeah, get prep the rifle. It's like, you know, it's just ready. It's just good already, yeah.
On top of that, he also, what was I going to say? Fuck. He could already rifle in CSGO. He was already rifling, like you're saying. And when you go into these events and there's updates dropping mid-event that are then changing the ability, sorry, not the ability, but like the animations, which was a big point for a lot of these players, that the animations weren't lined up, the tracers weren't working properly.
Insidious. So
you
have these
you have a lot of these updates coming out mid-event and throughout this first, like next 6 months, first 6 months of the game, that are going to make these minor tweaks that are actually going to improve a lot of these issues that players are talking about. And one of the big things with the op was a lot of players were talking about this animation desync, players moving really fast across your screens, the op shot not actually lining up with where you're flicking to like it did in CSGO. So as these things are updated, you're not going to have like the op drop off as much as people think it is going to, as it did initially. And there's obviously like the adaptation of the game changing. So no matter what, you're going to have these players start to realize like, oh, like we can exploit smokes in this way with the op as well. You can change like the way you do certain things to based around the op as well. Because right now, because it's so new and the smokes are new and people are playing very fast paced, it is a little bit harder for the op because you have people getting in your face a lot quicker and it's not as easy to counter that. But as we go through and the meta actually establishes, I think you're going to see a lot of these oppers find like new tricks, new gimmicks, new ways to play. You just, those kind of tricks are a little bit harder to do when stuff is evolving so quickly and stuff is changing.
By the way, one other thing as well that people forget is that we already like have changed to MR12 as well. People aren't adding that in. So like one thing I do think, and this will definitely hurt the oppers because obviously you get the gun less often in theory, right? Is, dude, people haven't adjusted their brain for what the score proportion is. Like I see people acting like someone goes like 15 to 9, like, nah, it's just whatever. It's like, no, in MR15, that'd be whatever. That's a fucking sick calf. What are you talking about? Like he's going bonkers. Like, remember, we're only playing 12 rounds a half, guys. So yeah, there's just a lot of things people have to adjust to. Maui, what do you think on the Ziwu back to prime form angle?
Yeah, his I mean, he really, really did show up in this event. His angle management was really good. If he's playing around a single piece of cover, it felt like it feels like when you're watching him still, you can be watching the best anchor in the world. At the same time, you could be watching the best opera in the world. You could, like the way that on pistol rounds, he's also just prone for a pop-off any given moment, could get a 3K out of nowhere. He's just still one of the smoothest players in the game for sure. Like, as much as I have spoken negatively about certain aspects of Ziwu, and it's mostly just kind of like he doesn't really have the pizzazz. It's you could stick him in any single situation in the game, and you're now going to witness what is probably the most optimal way to play that situation out. And that's really the biggest credit I could give Ziwu as a player, because you probably want him over just about anyone in any given circumstance. So that was very obviously shown there at the Fall Finals. I do think that Ziwu has figured out the game. And if we actually talk about the op fact, I think that update with the animation desync that Note was mentioning, that's when I also felt that the op was finally good to use again when I've been playing CS2. And honestly, at this point, I don't really think there's an excuse to say the op is that bad anymore, because flat out, it's good. It's fine now. I don't really think... I think Simple should just come back and play now, if I'm being completely honest, if I want to go on a tangent there. Like, the op's fine now, dude. Like, it was bad for the first couple months, but honestly, at this point, Ziwu showing that it's completely usable. I don't know how Monacy made it look so good at I Am Sydney. I'm going to be honest. Yeah. I don't know how he made that look so easy, but it definitely is a lot easier now because they fixed the coding with the game and Ziwu's taking advantage of it.
My assumption on the Monacy one, by the way, is that because he's one of the people who looks like they just put infinite hours into the game since the beta. I assume he's just more comfortable with it anyway. Whereas the other thing is, that's the other thing. We're all talking like the game's the problem. Some of these players didn't stop playing CSGO till the end of Pro League, and then they started CS2. Like, not all of them were grinded on the side, moonlighting in the other game, as it were. Like, I think people have underestimated that aspect too.
I also think there's players who have been around so long that they are kind of, they're just going into this game and they're taking it by the by. It's kind of like, okay, we're going to keep putting in work, blah, blah, blah. But then you have players like, the two players who really stood out to me when I talked to them in Sydney was JL and Monacy. Both of them said that we're now taking this game and it is a reset and we want to be the best players. Like, they're taking not just the opportunity, but they're taking it as kind of like, JL said something along the lines of like, there's no idols in this game. Like, there's no new people, there's no tenured people to, even if there's Zywu, there's Simple, there's people carrying over. He's kind of taking it as like, there's nobody to look up to. I'm going to look up to myself and make everybody else look up to me, which is like super boss shit to say. And I really respected that out of him. And Modesty said something really similar. He's like, I put in so many hours because I want people to, I want to be the best right away. On the Zywu angle, one other thing that I saw during this event was that he was flashy. Like, there was moments where he was way more flashy than he used to be. He had, like, highlight clips that were not, like, the standard Zywu ones where, like, oh, he's just looking in the right place at the right time. He's, like, knows... he kind of, like, picks apart angles specifically. He had clips, like, even on Inferno, there was, like, a 2v4 on A-side on pistol, and he was just, like... snap straight away, like insta headshot, snap, snap, snap. And it was like stuff like that that makes me like be able to see promise in him going forward, in terms of keeping this level and not dropping off like people thought he might.
He's obviously got to get that cultural impact, hasn't he? He's got to get a bit of the flame. That's also, by the way, Mau, you notice also the other tactical thing you have to do is you have to set up whatever your take is so that, like, no matter what happens either way, you could just claim the win. Like, if he doesn't do it, you go, see? No cultural impact. If he does it, you go, that's all I was asking for all these time, guys. And then they get mad no matter what.
Like, an analogy I would draw with how I watch Zywu versus Simple, and I would even put Rops into this discussion, come up is kind of like when a lot of people learn how to play an instrument, I think the people that really get the best at it play it pretty slowly at first, and what they do is they learn, they get it down to perfection when they play slowly, and then they start to speed themselves up at levels that they're consistently comfortable with until they can play a masterpiece incredibly quickly. And then that looks like, it looks really impressive. But in a way, it was almost like the way Simple would have played the instrument would have been, he tried playing as fast as humanly possible. And he just tried to like play that number as fast as anybody in the world could. And he would make mistakes. And we saw throughout his career trajectory that he would make those mistakes over and over again. But he kind of just like, because he put himself through such rigor, he was able to come out on top in a way that nobody else has, which is why he was so impressive and so flashy. But then Zywu and Rops, for that matter, were the ones that like were just incredibly studious, played the instrument very slowly, and then realized over time, wait a second, I've already mastered how to play this at this tempo. Let me actually try to up it a couple degrees. And then now we're starting to see them actually take control of the game with upping the pace. And that's something where I think Rops in the last year, for example, has done such a great job at showing that he has another element to his game that he can play a little bit faster and impose his skill and speed on people more.
Okay, it's a Simple, some sort of like metal guitarist from like Meshuggah or something. All right, fair enough. Okay, yeah. I like it. I dig it though. I sort of see what you mean about the difference in the diversion in the styles. Right, Nort, what is your bad point?
Okay, so my bad point was I feel like Majusk is wasted on Falcons, especially right now, given that they didn't get Nico, they didn't get Monacy. You have these changes that were all rumored for a while that you could see the pieces coming together. They could have had Snappy, they could have had Modesty, they could have had Nico, Magus. Then they get one more player. Like, that's a pretty banging roster. But now you have this, what looks like it's almost fallen apart. Like, yes, you have Snappy potentially going there. You have Magus there. But as you look at the rest of the pool of riflers and the rest of the pool of players right now, it becomes a little bit harder to actually piece together a team that like is ostensibly better than Vitality or this new phase that will be there or Mao's. Like, a lot of these teams that have now stabilized and are able to consistently contend, if you look at it, whatever pieces Falcons put together, they're not going to be that much better than these teams if they're not going to get the likes of Nico or get the likes of, you know, these kind of players. On top of that, you have the other options that he potentially could have gone to. He could have stayed in Vitality, would have been a good team as well. He could have joined Astralis instead of Steyr. So you would have Device, Blamef, Sound, Yabby, Magus. That's a banger lineup. And actually could be a really good Danish team that's consistently good. Then he could have gone to FaZe. He also could have gone to Mao's once frozen Lees. So you have all of these teams that he could add this crazy amount of experience and a role that like very few can play to the level that he can. Yet you have him wasting away on Falcons right now. He's not able to, obviously we're entering a break soon, but he loses out on this last bit of the year. We go into the major next year. Like Vitality could very well not qualify or not perform very well at that major, whereas you have these teams that do have a proven track record. So especially right now, I feel like he's wasted, but I also feel like you look down a year and you might be able to look back at this if Falcons aren't able to successfully buy out some of these players. Like if they're not able to buy Nico, that's a huge slight to them, especially with all the money that they have. Like it, you'd think they would have been able to complete something like that, but you look down a year from now and I feel like Magic is going to look at this decision as a bit of regret.
Yeah, this is not panning out very well for Majisk at all, is it? It's right now, what, Snappy, Boros, and him. And yeah. I like that, actually, what was it, Kassad had that hot take that they're not even going to, I think he said they weren't even going to qualify for the major, which I still think is probably, I think they're more likely to do it than not. But for Majisk and more or less squandering what he had there, it does seem like it's going to be pretty tough for him just because like he works. The thing is with Majisk is that you want him to be a player that you can rely on, but you don't necessarily always need, like you would want your yes. Sphinxes and Zywoos to be the guys that are really carrying the load for fragging potential. And then if your second line of defense is someone like Majisk, well, then you have one of the best teams in the world and one that can win a major. But if he's supposed to be your best player, and as it stands right now, he is their best player. He's better than Boros and he's better than Snappy, obviously. And so that's when he's not really supposed to be the star. Like we saw what he was when he was a star actually for Dignitas when he was playing under MSL, and he was darn good. And he was a standout player, no doubt about it, but he wasn't a player where you were really trying to, like, I guess you could win some championships. Like, they won an Epicenter, I think, where Majisk was very, very good for them, at, like, 2017, maybe, or something like that. But it's not like that's supposed to be really the case where your anchor player is your guy. Actually, he played some rotator roles at that point. But it's just that I don't really think he's going to even roll it back to supposed to be like a rotator player. Like, he's just so good in anchor spots. Like, you want him on Pit, on Inferno. You do that, and that's a guy where, again, it's the last line of defense, and he can't really handle things if the rest of the roster is just falling apart before him.
Yeah, I actually think the way you framed this point was very good, Noah, because here's the thing. If I'm everyone else in the team, it's awesome they've got Magus. What the fuck? Now we got a chance. But the joke is, if you look at every other member of the team, there's a very good reason for them to be there. Like Zonic, if they really did ask you to take a 70% pay cut, problem solved. Go to this new team, have a budget, do whatever you want, get longevity, get like a multi-year career where they won't fire you if you fail the foot. That makes perfect sense. If you're Snappy, look, the team might be worse than Ents, but you're going to get paid more money and you're going to have way better players in the future, you think. And now you don't have to worry about what we all know he was. No matter what Natu said on HLT, we confirmed, he might not think he's a farm team. But spoiler, I'll consider you not a farm team when people stop farming your fucking team. So you let me know when people go, no, Natu, I'd prefer the 12k over the 32k a month. Yeah, let me know when that happens, because that hasn't happened for me yet. So maybe Glaive can change it. We'll see. So Snappy, great move as well. If you Boros, dude, it's not like you're going to a better team. You'd still be on like tier 1.5. And also, I will say, don't let that fucking major and the stats of Boros fool you. When you watch the actual player, the eye test doesn't check out. As in, his mechanics do. He's really skilled. Yes. But bro, this guy, for real, it looks like an FPL player that's just pressing forwards and shooting everyone. Like, now look, I will say, maybe Zonic can be the man that develops him, you know, finds his role. But that is not certain. Like, the difference is people like Magus, like we said, they're the finished product. They're already amazing. They're already arguably the best at whatever role you'll put them in. But the joke is, if you are Magus now, you obviously did join hoping it's like, right, and then Nako comes, then which AWP are we getting? You know, what are we doing now? And it's like, at this point, if you're Magus, you're like, who have we got? And they're like, what do you mean, Magus? We have you. And it's like, fucking hell. Because I agree, Maui. If you look at people's careers, once they go either IGL or more supportive, they don't ever come back. There are very rare people that can do the reverse and be like a hard carry again. And as you say, his hard carry days, we're talking like 5, 6, 7 years ago now, a long time. Well, it's not 2 years ago like people think. So the modern day Magus, it's like you say, I consider him like one of those insurance policy players. It's like you say, you have the big fragger, but then he's the one who might save your ass or might win a ridiculous mid-round or win a 1v1 for you out. Or just hold a sight when they attack and you think, oh, it's 1v3 and he mows you all down. That player can't carry the game for you. Like, in fact, the saddest thing about this team is, this is why the Nico one is so brutal, because it's not like they, it doesn't even matter that we didn't know who the other members were. If they just also got Nico, the whole thing changes black and white. It goes from like, wait a minute, we've got Snappy and Awesome IGL and Nico Superstar and Magus and Zonic. Fuck, now it's the other way around. It's like, how do we even fuck this up? Surely we're going to get someone
that attracts talent as well. When you have Nico and Modesty and Snappy, you're going to get other two players who are banger as well.
So to me, it's like, yeah, unfortunately, I agree. And here's the big problem. I was just doing the copium of like, I'm sure they'll get good players eventually. But actually, when you did that like rundown of the different teams, dude, the FaZe one especially, oh, mate. I like Frozen, but if you told me Magus was replacing Twists, bro, can't we just win everything? Don't we just win everything in the game? Isn't that even, by the way, the secondary caller that would probably be like a dream player to play with Carrier? Fucking hell, but I think we just win everything, don't we? Like, when I actually think of that, that is mental. And obviously, yeah, there's other big teams also he could have been on that could have been awesome. So it is a bit wild. I mean, obviously, I have to just hope he got the bag and eventually they get good players. But as of right now, the problem is you have just gone from like Vitality, as we've seen, you were always going to be in contention. Fuck knows what roster he's walking into his first LAN match with. Like, this could be fucking rough, boys. This could be a bit brutal. I know.
Quickly on the Boros point before Alex jumps in, even at the major, when I talked to Krasnell, it's in the interview as well that I did with him, but he was like, yeah, Boros is sick, but like, he does so, he didn't say this literally, but he's like, he does so much dumb shit. Like, he will over aggress and push and like, he will overextend to the point where like the team are having we're having a really hard time reining him in. So when you have a player like that, yes, sure, he's banging heads and he can put up some good stats, but like, you're really going to struggle to maintain consistency with that kind of player.
Yeah,
I could just get to my bad point.
Still. Yeah, it's the unfortunate but somewhat obvious realization that Cloud9 are so clearly capped in terms of what they're going to be able to do moving forward if they're going to stick with this lineup. Sure. Because the fact that they do not have a consistent T-side opper means that every single team that plays against them has no qualms with just like aggressing with CT side rifles. It's so frequently the problem with this Cloud9 team where if a CT side, like imagine almost like the good heroic, the one we saw maybe 6 months ago in this year, that would just re-aggress all the time. They'd push, they'd send two guys, they'd throw a flash or whatever. Those kind of plays really, really suck if there's an op on the other side against you, especially if you don't have that flash. And essentially, Cloud9 don't have that opper that's going to be posted on these angles. It's essentially on T side five rifles. You're seeing that when they have to play these T sides, they can get themselves into pretty good positions, but they're going to get flanked pretty frequently, or they're just going to actually just get pushed and have to win a 50-50 duel with a rifle. And so on CT side, I actually do want to say that I haven't minded Boomich's and Hobbit's trade-off of opping. I think it's actually been weirdly decent. I'm not going to... there actually have been moments where Boomich gets a multi-frag in a position where people are really pressuring with nades, or Hobbit does the same thing. And so I've been pleasantly surprised there, but their T-sides are always just going to fall short if they can't really default in the same way and really kind of constrict the opposing defense in the way that most teams can, because they just post an op on an angle. Like, you're not going to really send Boomich Palace with an op to try to hold the jungle rotation if someone comes out a window and tries to move into jungle to try to help the AA defense or whatever on Mirage. So yeah, you're just super, super limited. I guess Boomich could get better with it, but I feel like Boomich is such a weird player in terms of his skill set is so suited to being more aggressive, to try to be a space taker, a disruptor. And I don't think that Hobbit really is keen on just becoming a world-class opera all of a sudden this late into his career either. So unless Cloud9 do something about their lineup and just pick up an opper, I guess, I just can't really see them escaping or breaking through top five. I think they could have one miracle run, kind of in the same vein that Liquid did with their Grand Slam, where you kind of didn't need an opper and you could still win some tournaments here and there. Like, they can still win a tournament, I think it's possible, distantly possible, but it's just really, really hard to imagine a level of consistency without a T-side offer.
Jump in,
Norris. I think you're bang on in that they need a player change to actually do anything from this point in it consistently. You need to... I think there were... I mean, I don't even want to say rumors because it was like Jonas Life, and I think that track record is very poor. But there's something... I think he said something about them wanting to get Simple instead of Hobbit or something, but there's like conflict there, and some players might not want to play with Simple, something along those lines. So I think you're right in the sense that they do need to make a change, and they do need a consistent opera in that role. I mean, where is Dexter at? Honestly, why is this not
Dude,
a player?
This guy must
at?
Have killed everyone's dog. It's crazy. Like, he just can't get the call up no matter what kind of gets mental. It's so bad.
It's crazy. But I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of, yes, they could fluke a tournament. They could maybe have their players pop off and be able to get a result there. But the consistency for this roster and like the long-term like peak level that they're going to show is really questionable at this point. I think, yes, they will be a top 10 team. The level they're showing does enable that consistency and the kind of players they have and the way Electronic's playing now that he's relinquished of the IGL duties. But I think they absolutely need like a top-tier opera to be able to consistently beat a lot of these rosters, especially once you have these changes come in, you have these rosters, these other teams stabilize. It's just so crazy to me that you don't have like Dexter walking through the door. You had Shiro leave for unknown reasons. You could maybe get Simple, but it seems unlikely. But who do you look to at this point if none of those players are walking through the door?
By the way, this is the team to tie into what I said earlier about the AWP. That proves the AWP still matters. Like, if the AWP doesn't matter, this team should already be capable of being number one. Look at the fucking players they've got. Like, what an awesome... And now they don't even have Electronic IGL. Should be problem solved, right? Should just be waltzing through these games. But as you see, it really does take everyone going fucking supernova for them to have a chance in these matches. So, and with Maui, I think, look, they could, in an MR12 BO3 world, you could fuck around and have the right players pop off and win a tournament, but it would have been consistent, and it wouldn't be, you'd never actually be the number one team, you know what I mean? You'd have been the best team for that one tournament and probably just the players pop off. And then also the other thing is, man alive, if you're a fan of this team, it's just, it's like fucking, it's not even, it's not hell and it's not heaven, it's purgatory. You're just in purgatory your whole life. It's like some cursed monkey paw shit. It's like, bro, can we just get a proper IGL? Yes, no problem, Thorin. Here's your IGL. I'm just going to take your opera away. Well, I need the opera as well. Well, what about if I, you know what I mean? I give you a break. Well, what about if we get someone else? Like, also, let's be real. Not only did they waste all that time with like the questionable IGL angle, but now that they've got Boomich, who, by the way, it does look like he's going to work out fine. Looks good. I'm open for giving it a go with this talent group. Right. If I've previously said IGL's the most important role, that's because I just assume, you know, one person has to fucking use an AWP. The AWP's probably the most important role in the game. So we've got all these other good players. And the one player we don't have when we're a Chexnotes Russian team is a fucking AWPer. That almost takes, like, talent to not have an AWPer when you're a Russian team. Like, you are aware, guys, even the ones who haven't made it to Tier 1, that all the virtual TV people are... They're all Russian! They're all fucking Russian! And you are not Na'Vi! I understood why in Na'Vi you couldn't get these players. There's a very bigger world context. There's nothing for this one! Like, one, they've shown they will sign Russians, and two, they don't have any problem with it. And there's not even any Ukrainians in the team. Like, the whole thing's just like, can we... Like, this just feels, like, such simple... Because the real thing that kills me about this one is, it's the same problem we've had the whole time in Cloud9. They're always one move. Obviously, it has to be the right move. They're always one move from actually, no joke, just win everything. Like, they could have won a major with the last lineup if they had the right one. They could win anything in theory. But the other problem you see in this team is when you scoff your construction, you don't sort of go like, well, we're sort of like 85% there. Like, you're probably like 70% there when you scoff it like this. That's why it's so underwhelming. Like, it's actually the flaw of this team that's always shocked me is I get it when they play well. It's like, man, if you could just get this together. But man, the flaw could be fucking dire. They can have maps that are just really bad. Even still with this lineup, like, it can't have just been Nafani alone, even though it certainly was partially him. So I don't know. I just think it's brutal. Like I say, It feels so obvious what the move should be, but then again, there's also obviously, like you implied, there's obviously also some sort of internal conflict we don't know about yet. Like, dude, we still don't even know why Shiro's gone. We don't, like, if you think the rumor is that he goes to, like, Team Spirit, there's not a universe where Team Spirit's paying whatever he's playing in Cloud Nine. That actually implies there was some crazy, like, potential drama or something, or if he just doesn't want to play it, that would imply to me something like he just didn't see any future in the team. So, unfortunately, from the outside on paper, it still looks dope to me. It still looks like it could be a really awesome team. At a minimum, looks like it could be really entertaining. But in the survey, it just never fully works out with this squad for whatever reason. It's a good bad point, though.
The Shiro leave is just so hard to fathom. Because when talking to the Cloud9 people, I forgot who mentioned it. I think it might have been Axile, but basically they were kind of blindsided by it too, where it just came out of nowhere that he just decided not to play anymore.
It's not even just that he left. He left right when they got the IGL change. The whole time we were give Electronic a try, but if it doesn't work out, I hope they swap. And then they swap, and that's exactly when, like, we don't even, like, at least give this three lands. Can I have three lands? Then you can go. After that, you can go forever, do whatever you want. Like, fuck off to Zanzibar if you want, but at least let me see what it's like with an IGL. Please, please, please.
I will say I have two little things here, which are, one is that I said so long ago that this Boomich thing would work out, and there were so many detractors for so long. It looks pretty good, guys. Like, I have to gloat just a little bit there. That this is looking like it should have happened a year ago. Like I said, when it should have happened. The second thing, and I don't even think you guys should even comment on this because it is purely conjecture, is that when Shiro brought out the minerals at Cologne, I was like, okay, this guy got a girlfriend. Like, there's no man that just, like, gets right, the minerals. Okay. Like, I'm just gonna be honest.
Oh, that's why you were pushing the astrology angle, right? I see now. Okay, right. Okay.
There's no guy that gets into crystals just because they feel like it. Okay, so definitely Shiro got a girlfriend or something like that, or he started talking to a girl to get into crystals, and then he mysteriously leaves the team. And I think that whatever that is a bad influence on him, and he should probably confront that in terms of just, like, don't let this person help you make career moves. That's all I'm gonna say. Okay. It could be a great relationship beyond that, but I think that if you're getting influenced by someone that says put crystals on your mouse pad and leave Cloud9, that's probably not the right person for you. Just saying.
Okay. Not, what's funny is you said that like it was going to be really explosive. I think what you just said at the end there, it's hard to disagree with. Yeah, I agree. Those are bad decisions, believe it or not, Maui. Like, or at least they don't make you win in the game. I'll just say that. They don't make you win the game, do they? You know? Right. Let's move on then, because mine is actually a banger. Because here's the thing. My actual bad point has been made good today, because the day of recording is the first day of that Espoo Masters tournament in Finland. And within one map, they've killed the hype of Glaive already. But here's the problem. You're going to have to wonder, what's my bad point? My bad point isn't Glaive joins in. It's actually that this is going to be the worst possible example of what I actually already was a bit disturbed by, which is, dude, even when the rumor came out that Glaive was going there, I can't believe how many people won't even give it a chance. Like, that's what I'm putting down as bad. The idea that, like, Glaive doesn't even get a shot in Ents. Guys, it's fucking Ents. Like, I don't care what my boys with R2. His Orc is not fucking Vitality or G2. It's actually incredible that they're at this level. Like, by the way, even if Glaive didn't succeed like Snappy, he's still a very good eligible candidate for your team. Like, if you're not taking him, you're not getting a legendary player. You're getting some up-and-comer. You're essentially gambling. You get the next shoe here. And by the way, for all we know, and also blow people's minds because I'm not going off, like, recent form, I'm going off overall fundamentals. On paper, surely Shuey is not actually a better IGL than fucking Glaive. He just currently has looked better with his team. And then also, to me, the other angle they're missing here is, it's even possible Ents fails, and I still won't think Glaive was a bomb. It's about the personnel you have. Like, I don't know how he'll work with these players. It's interesting. Like, the joke is, I even spent all the time, ever since Sun Pius appeared, and I even saw, like, similarities between how Device opts. It's almost the perfect player to come and IGL these fucking guys. So, look, the reason why I bring it up is because, like I say, I think now's when essentially the stock's going to be its absolute lowest. So I think that's my problem. Not only just that this BO1, but I think this BO1 sadly will be used just as the ultimate fucking cosh to wreck Glaive with until he actually has some success, because I can't believe that. That's like I say, people are acting like he got the G2 job over Huxley and he's now the, like, leader. No, bro, he's hit the team he's on, and by the way, the salary cut he's probably taking, it's all entirely reasonable for where he is. And if you know how pro sports work, where if someone's a legendary player, if you are a small team, you take a chance on them. You see, it's like complexity with a leash. Loads of people would have thought, what's this going to do? It looks awesome now. You gambled. You gave him his sort of whatever he needed back in the game again, and he's flourishing again. The idea you just bail on Glaive completely. Yeah, it looked whack in Astralis, but that was one team, and I'll just put this in there. Are we all going to ignore that it was Astralis, the team that just refused to recruit like four good players? And we all know there was shenanigans, like they were paying God, you know, more money than God, but to like Zipniks on the bench, you know what I mean? Like there was so much fuckery around that team. Like to me, if anything, this is the proper, like give Glaive a proper second chance now. Like obviously if he fails, he fails, whatever. If he dies, he dies. But in this scenario, I think he's more than earned a fucking second chance with a real team.
It's also crazy how many other IGLs get given that easy second nod, but Glaive is somehow counted out when he has such a good track record in terms of the events he's won and how consistently he called for so long. And like you said, I think the Sunpa's point is actually really underrated because you have an opper who's going to be really similar to someone that Glaive has already worked with. And you have him coming into this event and they barely had any practice and they lose a BO1 to a tier 2, tier 3 team. You can't be putting all of that emphasis on the single result when it's really not setting an example for the long run as to what this Ents will be able to do. And Glaive is famous for his system. Like, that whole Astralis team was based around the system that he created, or that he and Zonic created, that gave them an actual game plan and gave them a whole structure to work around in-game. You don't create that in a day or a week or a couple of days. So if you're putting so much emphasis on the single result, I feel like whoever's overreacting to these things is just being completely unreasonable.
By the way, this is one thing I also actually, it is a pet peeve of mine in the industry, though. It's where, like, I'm one of the people who spent literally years, piece by piece, building that narrative. Like, maybe Carrigan could be the GOAT IGL, though, guys. Like, let's at least make it a discussion. And then, look, he's gaining. And then what happens is, people think they're joining my team by going, yeah, you're right, Thorin, Carrigan's the GOAT, because that Glaive fucking sucks. And you're like, well, obviously, wait a minute, whoa. Come on. That was never the other, that wasn't part of my opinion. My opinion in this scenario, if Carrigan's the GOAT, is like, by a sliver, and the second best is Glaive. Like, this is so sick. This is one thing where it's too binary in fucking CS. It's not just that because Zonic turned out to be really good without Glaive and devices, that means Glaive did nothing. Now you've gone too far the other way here. I mean, true, before they made it like he did everything, but now you've gone too far the other way. There's got to be a balance on this. He had to, put it this way, I can't even believe I have to say this statement out loud, Maui. You can't win 4 majors if you aren't fucking good at your job in CSGO. I don't know why that would be a crazy, but some people needed to hear it, apparently. Some people today needed to hear that the guy who won 4 majors probably pretty good at in-game leading, Maui. Like, what a world.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're all good at their roles. People would just need to circle back to the main genesis of this point, the fact that people would think that maybe Glaive doesn't deserve a chance here and he should prove himself even at a lower stage. It's that people just need to temper their expectations about what Ents is as an org and how they have more or less, before this really, like a couple times when they struck gold with Alexi B and they struck gold with Snappy in this lineup, they've always been kind of meddling a little bit lower in like the 10 to 15 range, more or less, as opposed to this top 5 range that they've now inserted themselves so regularly into the conversation with lately, just because, I mean, like we say, they're not the biggest spenders. They're really just predicating a lot of their success on good scouting. And for this kind of pickup, it's not that, I mean, Glaive is probably, like, in some ways, Ents should probably be like a, you would say like a tier 1.5 team,
yes,
but they've just done such a great job repeatedly that we see them as this like world beater, contender, championship title potential team. When in reality, if they just kind of with this lineup end up in the 6th to 10th range, I think they probably find themselves in a pretty happy state. I don't think that they're too upset about that, even though that's a bit of a drop off from when they had Snappy and were winning events like IEM Dallas or an event like IEM Dallas. So I think this is a great landing spot for Glaive for a lot of different reasons, and that being one of them, where it kind of just suits the credit that we should give him based off of his track record, and also the fact that this team needs an IGL,
yeah.
And really, I don't really know who else they would have really gotten that should be much better than Glaive here. Like, this is probably, to me, like a pretty harmonious match between the two of them. It's like, yeah, they're dating on the same level.
I mean,
to like Kixon or something from Apex, yes, if they wanted to take a chance on someone, and then you're taking a chance on someone.
No, that's also why, exactly. Like I say, I don't even think that angle makes sense. The joke is, by the way, Oh, well, here's the statement. I'll take what I said earlier, modify it. If I actually had a choice right now, for Ents, crucial word, for Ents, I would choose Glaive over Shuhi, by the way, who does look like a mega prospect. Because the one thing Ents doesn't have is they haven't properly won yet, have they? They're like this close and they need the veteran IGL who knows how to win. None of the people that we're talking about who would be on the list, aside from Glaive, would fit that bill. They'd all be new people. They'd all be up-and-comers. They'd all be people who themselves haven't actually proven they can win yet. So, yeah, I find that angle so silly. And also, Maui, on that angle, like, not only are people going too hard on Glaive and acting like you had the best team, they act like, dude, he still had, like, the Primus Trials and just failed all these tournaments. Like, he had some pretty whack players, like Lucky and fucking Farley. You know, like, give me a break.
Yeah, and then
also, I'll just throw this in there. When they say that Langle, like, you should go down to a low level, what's he supposed to go, like, to Astralis Talent and then get them to, like, win the fucking We Play Academy League when it starts here? What are you... that's not even a plausible, like, career path, is it? Like, in this scenario, I agree. I just think that it's the perfect scenario for both teams to take this gamble. Also, remember, it doesn't have to last 4 years. If it's shit, you just change 6 months or something like. But I think it's for all parties, I think it's worth rolling the dice. I think it's a pretty good move. Right, come on then, Nort. What's your ugly point?
So my ugly point was, I think the way Valve has their current ranking set up, and I think you might have talked about it a little bit on the last episode, but the way Valve has their current ranking set up is just rubbish for the long-term prospect of how majors are set up and how in 2025 a lot of invites are going to be based around their ranking. Obviously, Disclosure HLTV has their own ranking system, so I'm not trying to trash on Valve just because we have a ranking. It's more so that I think for the longevity of the game, there needs to be a lot of updates to this, especially the fact that it weighs prize pool so heavily.
Yes.
To me, it really doesn't make sense, especially I think it creates more of an issue because it's making it ripe for exploitation, especially from a lot of these companies that are now setting up their own online events with, like, massive prize pools. You have these $300,000, $500,000, $250,000 online prize pools that are usually sponsored by betting companies, and then they're inviting their own internal teams, like the teams that are sponsored or owned by those betting companies, to their own events. Right now, it doesn't have as big of an impact because the teams haven't done well at the events. So you have, but you do have, like, BetBoom and BetBoom events. You have, like, PerryVision and Perry Match events. You have, like, all of these teams that have these sponsors, and obviously you have teams that are sponsored by betting companies, but when you have that direct ownership, it's just removing another layer of obfuscation. But it's creating such a problem because you have these massive prize pools, you have teams owned by the companies that are creating the tournaments, then invited to those events, and they can climb those rankings, hypothetically, just based on winning these insane prize pools, or getting even top four in these events. And then you're setting up the Valve invite system to majors right now and in the future to bigger events based on that ranking. It just seems to me that it's completely ripe for exploitation when it comes to being able to rig where some of these teams could land in that ranking.
The fact that, I mean, the prime example coming up is, of course, the BetBoom tournament where BetBoom gets just obvious invite into it. And I don't actually think, I mean, in terms of conflict of interest and everything like that, there was to me a little bit less of, I mean, obviously it is bad when a team, when their owner is the one that runs the tournament, because there could be some instance of foul play where, like, a referee gets their back on an issue that had a gray area, and then there could be some round that swung in their direction, which would give you a result that doesn't feel justified. But when the Valve rankings are simply predicated on the amount of prize money that you get, then obviously there's a huge, huge incentive to just host big tournaments if you have a huge sponsor and then invite your team to it every single time. And so that it needs, there, it's almost like their points shouldn't even count for this event, for BetBoom, because if Valve just notices any conflict of interest, well, then they should do away with that. And I would imagine that's more or less kind of also in the same vein of why in 2025 they want to remove all sorts of partnerships and franchises for like teams being part owners of the leagues that they play in, because this could always be the case and that it kind of is cyclical. So this is... It's obviously a pretty shitty issue when until that rule comes into place, this kind of can just keep happening.
The thing I hate about it so much as well is this is one of those like abstract discussions where we don't need to have an abstract discussion. We can actually talk about the specifics of the scene. Like one of the things I hate, Note, is this idea that like, you know, whenever like we used to back in the day, beg ESL and etc., just seed the fucking tournament, just do like the world ranking or, I mean, eventually the joke is they actually did a way more biased one, which is have the players seed it. But that was, we all know like everyone accepts whatever players say. So that was sort of the hack to get like a expert ranking, right? The reason that I always hated that is I've always given this example. Like, even if like when Thorin had his ranking and HLTV had their ranking, let's say like a tape, we have a difference of opinion. The difference of opinion is this. Maybe I have like Luminosity number 2 and Fnatic number 1 and you have Luminosity number 1. I'm never going to be having Luminosity number 17 while you're having number 1. Dude, everyone who creates a new ranking system, that's immediately what happens. Like, you go and look at their... Because one thing I hate is they never fucking dry run it. They never just run it or put last year's scores in and go, does that look like a proper top? They never do the most basic experimental things ever. They just launch it like Valve did with CS2 and go, you tell me why it's totally fucked up and then maybe I'll fix it. And you're like... brilliant, what a great system this is. So always launching with some wild shit. Like everyone saw the top 10 when they launched that ranking system was an actual abomination. There was like tier 2 teams in there who've never done anything at like a major LAN. So I don't even know how it was calculated. So I already hate the idea that we have to pretend like this is some AI training system. And it's like, well, obviously, you know, there isn't such a thing as subjective judgment. I can't tell who is better out of FaZe and Bet Boom. How could I know who to invite? We all as humans know that isn't even the edge case. The rare outliers are the ones where, like I say, is it 8 or is it 9? That's where you can use a system to help, right? But the thing I hear about this angle is none of us ever would watch the scene, and the obvious tournament that I'm immediately scared of when I think about this system where money can get you points, it's like WESG. Well, we all know WESG was a semi-joke tournament, but it had 500k for first place. And so as a result, in the Valve system, dude, that would be better than like a bunch of the lands we just had in CS2. Like, look how crazy that the points that would get you. And everyone knows, like, the famous one was when Envious won it, like, right before they did a fucking massive roster shuffle. Even they didn't think that lineup was sixer was good. They like laugh privately if you don't know about winning that tournament. Like, it's a joke to them. They won like essentially the prize money of the major for some shit where like half the teams can't even attend because it was like, that was even the one where it was like Olympic style, wasn't it? You had to all be from the same country. So that's the first thing I immediately worry about. And then the other thing I worry about actually is specifically, it's not even just orgs. It's when teams realize the loopholes and the edges, this could be exploited so much. Like, maybe not as obviously now, but dude, think about the circuit before we went online where there used to be loads of lands. I think back in the day, you already did get teams, by the way, who if they were like number 3 in the world, but they always lose to number 1, they would sometimes magically skip the next tournament, then go to the tournament where number 1 wasn't there. It gives them a chance to win. They get a trophy. So people already, in my opinion, used to fuck with the rankings and used to try and like get sort of like empty calories. I mean, I'll even say this. They didn't do it, but if you were real arseholes, like the joke is if FaZe had have won that final, they should have just immediately called Espoo and be like, can we play? Because then you can just boost the fucking streak even, couldn't you? You could just get like 10 more wins on that motherfucker if it's all half decent team. So I think the problem here is it's just the potential loopholes. They're not even loopholes. They could be enormous. Like, they could ruin the whole scene. And then also, like I say, everyone in this call, we might disagree upon, like, here's where we might disagree. Maybe we would disagree. Is Blast actually like a big tournament or is it like a banana cup? Like, no one needs to have the debate about kind of 8-tier or about this. But in this scenario, based on what Valve's saying, if you get a random tournament that has $4 million, say some Middle Eastern guy says, I want to put $4 million in, and half the top 10 comes, but only half, that could somehow, I'd have to look at the formula, maybe that becomes more important than like Blast World Final or something, you know, which is like, that doesn't make sense, you know. At the end of the day, it's like the old line from football. There's a line where Johan Cruyff, the brilliant manager from the Netherlands, famously said, I've never seen a bag of money score a goal. Well, essentially, the Valve ranking system implies the bag of money is the most important thing. Like, whereas really, the joke of modern CS is, it's why actually, I don't know if you know this, a lot of the team orgs think we should just get away with prize money since they all get so much salary anyway. They all think like the prize money part's like sort of an old relic of the bad old days where you needed to win that money to live. Like, in the modern day, ESL's shown you this. They've had tons of Pro League and Sydney and stuff where like they're not even close to the major money, but they're still the best tournaments outside of the majors and kind of and Cologne. We can all see that with the eye test. But in the Valve system, maybe they wouldn't be considered that. So I'm quite concerned because in general, the problem I always have when there's an issue from Valve is, one, how do we communicate to them that's a problem and are they listening? And then two, who are we even contacting? Like, is that the same person who does the balance? You know what I mean? Like, it's all over the place. So even though right now people aren't worried because it hasn't kicked in essentially yet, dude, I think there's almost certainly going to be problems with that. And there's going to be loopholes that people can exploit, sadly. Go to your point, Maui.
I could do my ugly point. So the main ugly point here is just that I don't think this energy roster is really going to accomplish much of anything. The reason I have this as ugly as opposed to just bad is that it really just sucks to see that this org is going out on a limb, and it's an org that I would imagine most of us still have a good amount of respect for in terms of what they were able to accomplish in the previous lineups histories, where they were actually like a top five team at some points in time. But it's just that, like, having to be somebody that sells NACS and still stands for NACS in a respect, and then seeing this roster on paper is just so underwhelming. It's just like, if this were either Hex or Fang and it was automatic instead, I would have a little bit more hope for them. But I'm still then having to sell myself on this idea that Daps is going to be above a Hooksy level fragger for the team, that OC wasn't really, in many times, the fourth best or fifth best player on Liquid, and that Breeze has a chance to even bring it back into any semblance of his older form. Like, there's so many things that have to go right for this roster for them to even qualify for the major, because as it stands with the five slots that are for North America, Liquid and Complexity are winning over them. I think MIBR is actually playing better than them lately too. I think Furia probably just has a better foundation and better firepower, and then there's always usually just one South American team that's going to do well, or even for that matter, I think Nouns and M80 might just be flat out better than them. And so to see a team have this huge announcement that they're trying to bring things, that they're trying to bring that back, that they're trying to get back into North American Counter-Strike. And then for me to just have these tempered expectations is really just kind of ugly, because I want to, when I hear the name like NRG, I want to imagine that team is a lock based on the org and its reputation that they are going to make it to the upcoming major. And for my money, I would give them slightly sub 50% chance of making it. I'm not really sold on this lineup right now. I've said before that I think Breeze has a really good shot of coming back. I think that OC actually could get unlocked if Daps kind of goes through his old motions, the way that he was able to make Cirque look so good, for example. But I don't really have the most faith in the rest of the roster to be punching up to be a sure thing for the major. Like, if they make it to the major, I'd be pretty happy for them. And I'm not going to say, like, oh, I was, like, so down on them or anything like that. Like, I think it's like a coin flip. I basically am putting this team as, like, sub just like 45% to make it to the major. And if you're not guaranteed to make it to the major, then what are you going to do on the world stage? And so that's where I'm really kind of just at a loss right now for how I want to see this NRG team, where I want, like, I was in a really shitty way. I was like Stockholm syndrome by EG to try to find these silver linings with this roster, like trying to hope, like, okay, this could do something. They're injecting a lot of cash into North American Counter-Strike, and so I hope that bears some sort of fruit, but that never obviously happened. And with NRG, I don't see how the situation is going to be really much different.
Where you at?
Yeah, I think one of the big downsides of this is that NRG are coming in as EG is exiting, in the sense of having both of those organizations being able to support a tier 2 NA team, and then you have M80 and you have Complexity who have risen up. Like, you have it, it seemed like you could have built back that tier 2 NA base and started to actually develop some of the talent, but then when you have EG dissolving and then you have NRG building this piecemeal lineup, it is a little bit, it does leave you questioning where the potential for it is. My understanding was that it would have been Automatic instead of Fang if Automatic had joined. So the lineup would have been OC, Daps, Hex, Automatic, and Breeze. So regardless, even that lineup would have hit a ceiling. I do think if they had managed to get that iteration of the lineup, I would have had a little more faith in, more so not in this major specifically, but more so going forward, they could have made one player change down the line and actually started stepping up and building a lineup from that and been able to start contending. Not necessarily for titles, but I guess contending more towards becoming one of the better NA teams. Whereas right now, I feel like they're now two, maybe even three changes away, and that often either won't happen or it'll take a year and a half, 2 years to actually come together, and you're gonna have to wait for a lot of the North American talent to be able to become available to do that. I think for NRG, one of the benefits of this lineup was that there's obviously price tags attached to European lineups that are much higher. And I think in this sense, they were able to get a roster for cheaper, which did help enable that return. But I think long-term prospects for this roster, you do need to make changes down the line. I don't necessarily, I agree with you that it is a bit of a coin flip going into this major whether they make it. I would put them also at like, I would honestly not even say 50-50. I'd say like 40%, given maybe even 35, given the caliber of the other teams and how long, for example, M80 has been practicing. I actually think they have a good shot. Nouns have been practicing for a while. So I think when you have a lot of these other teams that have been able to structure themselves and you have NRG coming in and building this lineup, yes, Daps has always been good at it and he's been good at finding talent, but is NRG also going to give him the money to be able to go and sign this talent that he's good at scouting usually? Or are we kind of stuck with this for another year? How long do we give Breezy this time? There's a lot of questions about where this lineup can peak, and it is a little hard to see the level that they've signed and then put faith in them to become one of the best NA teams in the near future.
The problem I have with this team in general is it's funny because individually, some of these players, like I was a fan of Breeze back in the day. I actually genuinely always am interested in Daps and his projects. Like he is actually quite a brilliant person who's somewhat undervalued and people don't see what he does behind the scenes. The problem is, though, when I look at this lineup, how did you manage to put together a lineup where every single player is a question mark? Every single one. Like, dude, this is like a worse version of the Falcons one. Like, at least Falcons had some pieces, just didn't have the right pieces. Every single one of these players could fail in their role. Daps was a fucking coach the last few years in Valorant. Like, he only came back because he had to stand in. Like, he isn't a player. Like, he might be able to get back to it. Spoiler, even at his prime, he wasn't very good. I will say, though, I did laugh on that, like, fucking video, like, announcement that had, like, all, like, Daps AWP highlight clips. Like, what is this, the one round Evans? That made me laugh because obviously that's not at all how he's going to play in the game. Then you go down the rest of the players, like, Fang. Just is someone who didn't really make it yet. People are still waiting for him to actually develop and truly make it on Tier 1 on LAN. Hexed, same story, a bit younger, so you give him a little bit more time, but hasn't done it yet. So far, we've got nothing, guys. These are all like question marks, or like it could be good. And then we go, what? Our last two players are Aussie, who, as we've just pointed out, just spent the last year being gaslit that the AWP isn't the best gun in the game by Team Liquid because they just never, ever played around him and given him. I mean, look, it was right to. I don't think they would have won tournaments if they did. But unfortunately, that makes me feel like I don't know if he's going to come out and be the old Aussie and be a primary AWP and be a star. I hope he does. But when you've been conditioned like that for all that time, you might just be sort of like chilling. And then the last one in the whole lineup is Breeze. Right, look, shout out to everyone in Astralis for making this next statement not factually true. But Breeze might be the worst player ever to be paid hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. As in, he had like a couple of years where he was still on the big contract and he was just putting up the most dogshit numbers ever. And that is so sad to me because, if anything, I hope fans understand. Like the thing about the bag of money doesn't. Bag of money also doesn't make you practice more. It just doesn't. There's a certain cap you hit, and beyond that, if you're bad, you're bad. If you're not motivated, you're not motivated. If you don't like the team, no one comes along and goes, "Look at your bank account, though," and you go, "Oh, now I love it." No, Breeze shows that like it isn't just about paying people. Like the joke is, he might even end up being better in this team where he probably gets paid less. Maybe now he is motivated. Maybe now it's brought it all back. So the problem I have is just too many question marks stacked on question marks stacked on question marks. And then after all that, like. People are, here's the problem, because of the order they announced them in, where it was like, it's probably going to be Daps and Breeze, and then like Aussie, that makes people think like, oh, it's almost like a core there. It's like, there isn't though, when you actually put the lineup together, it's just disparate players rammed together. So there's a million factors have to go right for this team to be any good. And I'll just throw this in finally. I think the reason NRG did this team is one, as you said, no, it's obviously way cheaper than buying out all these players in Roster Mania. But I also think, because in League of Legends, their team just had like a little run. Right now is the perfect marketing angle to go, we just believe in NA talent, we're investing in NA talent. All I'll tell you is this, until now in CS2, when Cole's in all the finals and semis, who the fuck was actually a Cole fan? You fucking rats. You all tell me you want NA players and NA teams, and then you all just hate them because they're not good. What you really meant, as we all know, is I want an NA team, square brackets, that's really good. Well, spoiler, this ain't it. So I think this is going to be Cole pre-CS2 all over again. They're just going to get flamed to fuck. Everyone's just going to call for roster moves on almost everyone, potentially, depending on who does a bad game. And the worst thing, like we're just discussing here, is unless you actually want to spend money, how do you get out of this hole? Because the other angle that really scares me is, look, if you play for like 3 months and you find out like two or three of these players can work, well, yeah, if you get me a checkbook and you tell me I can go to Europe, I can find you some players. Tell you what, I know some Russian players, I know some players more. But the problem is, if you look historically, that's not even Daps' style. Daps just did it in Liquid. Daps' style is, I'm going to find the guy no one knows is good. Well, the downside of that is they're not guaranteed. Like, when you bring Wonderful in, things would have to go pretty badly for it to fuck up. If you just take some random guy from anywhere in Europe in tier 2.5, look, he has a great eye for talent, but it doesn't mean they all make it. Like, he's not going to win the lottery every time he buys a ticket. So I also do worry about even, like, the long-term future of this project. Like, I don't think it's got a stable foundation. The players now don't look good. And I also, like I said, I think people will just be, they'll be over this team so quick. Right now, they're doing that thing kind of reminiscent of EG, of like, wow, NRG's back. I love NRG. Remember the old days? Wow, and they've got this player as well. That's all great until the second they go in the server, guys, and then you just see what they can do in CS2. And if it's nothing, they're going to have no fans, I'll tell you that right now. And the irony of all, by the way, is at least when Cole pre-CS2 were around, they were the only fully NA team. I mean, obviously, Halzerk, you may as well be in an AWP, mate. That's a joke, right? But this, the problem is Cole currently exists and can win events. So you really do have no fans. You have Daps fans and that's it. Because think about it, if I'm an NA fan, I'm a Cole fan, bro. They're the one that are going to win the tournament. I'm cheering on a Liege. I'm not going, oh boy, I hope Hextor fan gets it to you. Who gives a shit? Who cares about that, mate? No one does.
That's why I put it in ugly, because my entire timeline when this was announced was just everybody so hyped about it.
Oh, everyone's loving it, yeah.
I was like, can we take a step back and just assess this roster the way we would assess TSM? Because when TSM came out, everybody's like, fuck this team.
Oh, they did the fun.
And then NRG does it.
Yeah.
And everybody's just like praising it. And I'm like, they're about the same guy, but they're not going to be,
one of the things,
be the same in the world rankings.
One of the things I've had to learn to stop doing this myself, because everyone falls into this trap. It's like, what you really realize you're doing is, because it's not your money, you're just like, yeah, fuck it, for the novelty, you just roll the dice. And then eventually you realize, wait a minute, I am just telling someone else essentially to spend like millions of dollars building a squad that I don't even necessarily believe in. Like, just because it isn't me spending it doesn't mean that's a good buy. Like, I wouldn't recommend these moves. I would rethink the whole project if I were them. The sad part is, though, like I say, the Daps one especially, I do believe if you keep Daps, you build around, you can get a good team eventually. It just probably isn't this one, unfortunately.
I also think the part that's a bit unfortunate is, like, if Complexity's results go down in the next 2 months, they 100% could replace Halzerk with OC, but not if he's locked into a contract with NRG.
Yes.
So you are also losing out on that opportunity, because obviously OC and JT, Floppy, they all played together. That was when OC was at his best as well. So that's a massive lost opportunity if he's locked into that contract and Halzerk doesn't play well and Complexity want to make a change. That just seems like the most logical upgrade, but it seems very unlikely if he's now locked in. So,
right, we'll go on to the final point of the show. Do you have something else, Maui?
Well, I would just, if I'm NRG and I want to make this team marginally profitable, I would actually say if I don't qualify, especially for the major, that OC should be shopped pretty much immediately after that. Because if you're trying to recoup on the amount of money that you're spending on this team, I think OC is going to be the guy that will probably end up having really good stats, because he's going to farm tier 2 NA. Like, OC will farm tier 2 NA. I actually bet you that OC in these, like, because I don't know what NRG is even going to play, if I'm being honest. Like, are they going to go to Europe? Are they going to play over there? Or are they just going to farm NA? Because if they just farm NA, OC is going to have a 1.3 rating by the end of the year. Like, that's going to be the next couple months or whatever, or by January. So that'll be good for him, and everybody's going to be like, ooh, maybe OC's got it right now, but it's like, you know, the level of opposition isn't there for him. And so I would just put a reasonable buyout on him. Like, don't make it like $1 million or something. You need to make some money back, because you might not make the sticker money.
It's also such a big gamble on Breeze having like any form of a return to form, because like when I was writing the article where I was talking about the roster, I went back and looked at his career stats. And you look at 2019 specifically, or 2018, and he has like a 1.25 rating at majors and a 1.12 on LAN over like hundreds of maps. And then you look 2 years later and it's a 0.85 or a 0.95. And it's just such an insane drop off. And like, if the whole gamble is that he comes back to that level, it's such a risky move to be able to bank on for that team.
Right, the final point, and this is crucial, you listen to the framing, because remember, it's my ugly point. This is actually a team I am low-key, I actually like them, and obviously Maui on his hot take had them as the third best team. The ugly is just this, fucking Virtus Pro, isn't it? If people don't know, and this is the only thing that's saving them, is no one watches ESL Challenger events. So luckily, you guys don't know that they didn't win ESL Challenger, but spoiler, they didn't. And I'll just say, go look right now at the other teams at the event. Like, that's underwhelming. Because the problem is, Maui, this is why it has to be ugly, not bad. I can't give up on this team, because when I actually look fundamentally at the pieces, dude, it should be so good. Fleachy is low-key, probably the sleeper, like, best rifler that people don't really know about. Fame is like, look, he's had a bad few months, but he was fucking good that last year. James is just solid. He's actually like, I don't really have any complaints about him now. And the other pieces somewhat work, but the problem with this team is they still have that issue where, one, they will just wake up randomly and just lose. And then two, oh, it's such a fucking effort to win games for this team. Like, did they ever just smash anyone, ever? Like, does it ever happen? I don't feel like it, doesn't it? So the problem is, like, man, that just hurt Maui. Because it was supposed to be the other way. If anything, that was supposed to be the layup tournament that then builds into your... It's like the Enclave thing. It just kneecapped it immediately, hasn't it?
I was going to purposely avoid ever talking about ESL Challenger Yongshiping, because it just doesn't fit my narrative at all. And also, I didn't see it because I was working the fall final. So I'll go back and look at it to see how this broke down. But I don't know. I don't know how they lost to Monty. So I don't know. Like, I just see that it happened, and I'm just severely disappointed, because when I watched them in the Rubet and Thunder pick stuff, I was like, okay, they're sick. And now I'm just like, are you guys, they're not bad at LAN. They can't be bad at LAN. This is the lineup they had to win the major.
Yes.
It's the fact that you mentioned the Rubet and Thunder pick thing. That's actually the events that are helping them hold their current ranking, because they got first at Rubet and second at Thunder pick. If they lose those or go out super early, they're not going to be ranked anywhere close to what they are now, because all of their other LAN event appearances haven't been super good. I mean, yes, they were like third at in Yongshiping, but otherwise they're not winning a lot of these tournaments, and they're like Perry Dunav Party, they lost to Spirit as well. I think that was Spirit's first LAN as well with Donk. So you're losing to like rosters that don't have a ton of experience. Where is this team heading?
That's the million-dollar question, especially because also the other thing, by the way, we've discussed this many times before, but I'll bring it up again. They're one of the teams that really show you, just like Enst did in past years, why if you're not in the blast part of the circuit, you're just like locked out of half of CSGO. Like, the joke is, I've always pointed this out, that's what made me realize, like, this isn't just like a minor problem, this is a massive problem. The team that won the major, no, if you remember, it was only winning the major got them in Blast World Finals, but they weren't in the Fall Finals because they're not a fucking team. So it's like, I actually do feel like, no joke, I don't even know if it actually is possible to be like a long-term number one if you're not in Blast currently, as it is. Like, I feel like you'd have to be like lights out in every ESL tournament. Like, no one could do that. So, sadly, this is another team that, like, the joke is, why are they at ESL Challenger, not other tournaments? Because they're also bizarrely, by the scene, almost like undervalued or treated like the tier 1.5, even though, as I say, look at the roster and what they've like sometimes done. They should be right within the top 10, like the juicy part where they can do dark horse upsets, but sadly, it just doesn't happen, does it? I feel like at the moment, this... Look, sadly, if I say this statement, it sounds bad, isn't it? Like, I was going to say the whole CIS region is cursed, but there's obviously other implications behind that. I mean, as in, like, how many of these fucking lineups look dynamite on paper, and then they just sort of don't quite work out? It never quite, like, goes 10 out of 10 like you hope it will, you know?
Hey, when they brought in Mura, I actually thought that they would be able to start breaking that curse and actually have consistent top results, but it's just not happened.